good.
Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, it's that time again. That time is the time on Wednesday at 8 to 9 p.m. that you live for, man and woman. It's the K Thompson Live Show here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. blogtalkradio.com/K Thompson Live. You can go straight to it. We're here usually every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. live. And you can also listen to archives of the show, old episodes or episodes that you might be favorites of yours or anytime. I'm the son. I'm known as Eric Payne, the son of K Thompson. You are?
I am the mother of Eric Payne. How are you doing, Eric?
And that's K Thompson, in case you're wondering who that is. I'm all right, Mom.
Yeah.
And also,
same voice, huh?
Yeah. Okay.
I got a rest.
Okay, yeah, you got a rest. Okay. And also our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman, I assume we'll be calling in soon if he's available, or he might be out conquering the world like he usually is. But I'm sure he'll be calling. If he can, he will call in and let us know what's going on over there on the New York side. So, stuff in the news that you want to talk about, Mom?
Yeah, you know, mainly the debate. And even though it was away for a while, you know, having a good time and whatnot in the islands in St. John, I still was very conscious of what was going on here. And, of course, we were waiting for, the debate. One was the debate for last night. And it was very, very exciting. And we're talking about the candidates running for the president. The thing had become a hilarious comedy show at times, especially with the Trump. So it was really, really very amusing to listen to, and very, you get a lot of information, you have to say that. So many things are going on, so we're following this. If you want to call in to talk about it, we will be doing that. And I've listened to the debates. I've listened to Hillary Clinton. I've listened to Bernie Sanders. I've listened to Carson. And I don't know. It's just incredible that they really do not know a whole lot about a whole lot. And I don't think they know that they don't know. And then again, they do have a lot of information. But anyway, it's really very confusing. I think that Hillary Clinton is out ahead of everyone else, and I think that Bernie Sanders is, really quite unusually, he's unusually good, you know, in the answers that he gives. I mean, he is, you know, very direct about what should happen, what has happened, and there's a few other people. The person who really is somebody that I don't understand at all, but he does make me laugh, is Trump, of course. What about you, Eric? What's your take on all of this?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, last night, like you said, we had the Democratic debate. And one thing that probably was a big difference that everybody probably saw, that the Democrats were kind of pretty much united in what they're trying to achieve. You have kind of the outliers, on the fringes, Jim Webb, and some of the things he said, but in terms of preserving certain cultures. But for the most part, they're all in agreement. They have different ways and different ways of thinking, and there's slight differences. But it was I thought it was a good debate about the issues, not about some of the other silly stuff that goes on the other side. And that's my opinion. I think that the Republicans are doing a disservice to the United States with their whole debacle about the Speaker of the House issue. The one guy admitting that the Benghazi committee was formed particularly to bring Hillary Clinton down and to make her a less attractive candidate for this 2016 presidential election. And also, you know, now that they're all Kevin McCarthy, he backed out of it. And the other guy, Jason Chaffetz, who I was talking about in the last week's show, who's really kind of an underhanded guy, in my opinion, if you watch his questioning of Cecile, I believe her name is Cecile Richards, the woman that is the CEO of Planned Parenthood. You can see, as I said on our last show, how he was really kind of misleading people in terms of the facts. And so he was going after McCarthy. We discussed this last week. He was going after McCarthy initially when he first came out and made that blunder and made some statements and then came out a couple of days later and did a kind of a 180, talking about what a great guy he was. So, and he wanted to be, Chaffetz wanted to be Speaker of the House, but when we come up to date now, he's not an acceptable candidate, and they all want Paul Ryan, who does not want to be Speaker of the House because some people speculate that it might kill his chances to run for president or his ambitions. And also, this particular time, being Speaker of the House is a no-win job, which is why John Boehner is stepping down. And because you have a small faction of the Republican Party, the extremists and Tea Party individuals, about 40 individuals, that's holding their entire party hostage. And they're not interested in governing. All they want to do is stop government. And someone told me, someone that works very closely with these people, said exactly that. Their interest is not making this government work. That's their objective. The sad part about that is that a lot of the people who support those, mistakenly support those issues, are probably being very affected by that very thing. Perhaps if there's a government shutdown, some people's Social Security checks don't go out, things like that. And also the government shutdown, the last one we had, which achieved nothing but costing us about $24 million. So their party is really in disarray, and their infighting is in the detriment, is going to be to the detriment of the United States, because no work is getting done. And regardless of how they spin the truth, you know, there's always the facts. So, and you might think that we're spinning the truth, we have our opinions. So what you need to do, freedom is responsibility, research the facts yourself. And you need to do that as a free person in a society so you can thrive and achieve the goals that you have for your life and your family. So always do your research. And unfortunately, a lot of people thrive on the fact that many Americans are unaware and unknowledgeable about the issues, really. And we can be led astray. And this is not to say that it's not a big thing. There's a lot of issues, a lot of things going on, a lot of complex things. It's not as simplistic as some people would have us believe. And so taking a very simplistic view of these things does none of us any good. And, of course, there's that faction of America that wants to keep America in a place where people of color, black people, were second-class citizens. And they had first-class citizenship status. I'm speaking about some white individuals who still seem to believe in that. You know, I saw a news story just yesterday, for example, this is kind of related, about people, a bunch of people rolled by a black child's birthday party waving the Confederate flag, trucks and stuff like that, with their Confederate flag, talking about respect the flag and all that. So, you know, it's one thing to want to preserve your heritage, and it's one thing to want to preserve your people, but not at the expense of other people, not at the expense of making other people feel bad, feel down. And that's what I'm talking about. Those type of people want to take America back to days when black people were treated like that, when they could ride around and just do these offensive things and stick it in people's eyes and things like that. And, you know, the president went to Roseburg, Oregon, Ma, to visit, and they had some protesters out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a picture of some of the protesters, and they had an American flag, a Confederate flag, and one of that Don't Tread on Me flag.
Mm-hmm.
So the Confederate flag, to me, is always brought out as a way to say, up yours, black. That's always how it seems to come out. And as much as they claim that this is part of our heritage, if that's the heritage you're claiming a heritage of murder and mayhem and terrorism. And you have plenty of other heritages to claim. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's people who want to keep it, want to take America back. That's why we've seen this craziness once Barack Obama got elected.
Yeah.
You've seen these people losing their minds.
But, you know, that's so dangerous, because the fact that you know, the NRA, they are against people, you know, giving up their guns and so forth. And there's so many different things happening with blacks being shot at, killed. Same thing is going on and on and on and on. But people don't realize that the numbers of people, black and brown people in the United States, in this country, is beginning to be large numbers, and there's going to be a whole lot of killings that some of this stuff doesn't stop. But you know what? They've been saying the same thing that for years. However, I feel that with the amount of guns out there and the amount of people willing to use those guns, we're moving into, instead of away from, a very, very dangerous situation here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And people have got to be aware of it. You've got to be ready for it. You hate to say it, that if they're armed, well, you know, you've got to protect yourself. But the point is, you know, it's really, really very dangerous. You find that so many times you hear of different people driving and saying such nasty things, even shooting people at the, we had a whole list of shootings with the lady who was was killed in the jail. She's committed suicide because he got stopped her.
That wasn't a part of a shooting.
No, but anyway, right. You know, that's still the killing. And we have that over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, at least people are talking about the mass incarceration,
mm-hmm.
you know, numbers of, you know, young blacks. And what's going to be happening? Now they've got to let these people out of jail, and this is what's happening.
Right. Right.
But you don't know. It's a danger. It really is dangerous out there.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to circle back to the gun issue because it's very interesting. It's very interesting. You know, gun manufacturers in the United States, they manufacture a product.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you're a manufacturer, you want everybody to own your product,
right.
Which is why they have this tremendous lobby, and the NRA kind of is their fall guy, or not their fall guy, but their mouthpiece.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the thing about guns, if anybody's ever been to the range, you want to shoot them. They're kind of cool inventions. It's machinery. People that like machinery see it, and you see some of these assault weapons. They're high-tech machinery, and it's pretty cool to shoot them once in a while and see what that's like. But the thing about making weapons and things like that, and we have the great army and this and that, eventually you want to blow some stuff up and see if this stuff works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got a nice big gun. Well, what you going to do with it? You're going to shoot it, right? Because that's what it's made for. So we need to kind of change the mentality. And I think that an individual like Bernie Sanders really answers the question, because what he says is that he voted against, you know, the manufacturers. That's the one thing they're trying to hem him up on, is support of not holding manufacturers responsible for the actions that people take once they use these guns. And he explained, he said, I'm from a rural state. You know, hunting and all those things, we have a different value, a different perspective about gun rights than people maybe in the urban areas. But he is willing, and Martin O'Malley got on him and said, well, I have a rural area in my state as well. But Bernie Sanders said, you know, we have to have sensible gun legislation, gun rights. And I agree with that. You want to keep them out of the hands of criminals, you want to keep them out of the hands of crazy people and people who might be unstable. And anybody who thinks that it's okay to do a straw purchase, which is basically someone just coming and buying the guns anonymously, that's not okay. And I think that there might be an issue that turns the corner on the gun rights issue. I saw a news story the other day, Ma, where they were talking about the gun rights and how an illegal gun got into the hand of a criminal and shot these two police officers.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a store in Wisconsin that has sold more guns to criminals that have been linked. These stores that these guns sell have been linked to more crimes than a lot of other. It's like the most in the country,
yeah.
This gun store,
mm-hmm.
that a lot of illegal and criminal activities has come from the guns that have been bought there. But the kicker is, here's the kicker. They talk about in this story about gun rights and, you know, with the straw purse, because the person who shot these cops was an underage person who had an older person buy the gun for him,
mm-hmm.
right? And they just happened to be black.
Mm-hmm.
There was a black guy, shot these two cops. One cop lost an eye, you know, young thug, criminal. But the interesting thing to me is that, wow, now to make this story, and I'm thinking out loud, and I'm wondering, to make this story about gun rights, are they going to use a black face to try and turn the people's opinions about, yes, we need to stop straw purchasing? Because that's one of the main things that a lot of these gun owners and a lot of these people who seem to be anti-Obama and want to fly the Confederate flag, and these gun rights advocates, one of the main things is that they want to be able to buy their guns anytime they want, wherever they want. So I'm just wondering now that they've, and it's already been a fact, that that's how a lot of crimes are committed by these straw anonymous purchases. And so now that they have this news story where they had a black criminal who shot these cops, I'm just wondering if in order to turn the tide, they'll use a black face, you know, to try and get
Of course, you know that's going to happen.
And it's really interesting.
But, the, you know, the thing is that this has got to stop because the fact that guns are readily available in this country, of course. And everybody is going to have a gun, and you're going to have these mass shootings. And, you know, people should not make believe that black people are going to sit there and do nothing. Those days are over, okay? But I was reading this old magazine, well, not too old, it was in June 2015. And this is the Mother Jones magazine, and I read this article then, The True Cost of Gun Violence. And this is the data that the NRA doesn't want you to see. And here we have...
she's reading that off of that. That's the title of the magazine.
That's right.
You're not saying that out of your...
No. I said Mother Jones magazine.
Right, and also that is also...
This is all off the front page of the cover of Mother Jones. And it was in June 2015. Anyway, it was here. It says that guns kill 33,000 Americans and injure 80,000 a year. Okay, the total annual cost of gun violence in the United States is some $229 billion, and I'd be willing to bet that if you did that, if they did a numbers thing, you know, recently, it probably will have gone up. And that somehow, we're going to be saturated with this.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere, somehow, you're going to find groups of people forming small armies per state. And it's going to be based on race. So we're going to have the biggest race riots you ever saw. Now, I think the solution is to ban all guns. Ban all guns. Okay? You even have to watch the different police departments. Because the fact that every now and then, more than every now and then, you find a black person or a Latino person or somebody brown, black or brown, being killed by persons in the police department. It seems like this country is going backwards instead of forward as far as where the gun control is. I don't know the answer, and I don't think anybody else knows the answer, but these so-called politicians need to get on the stick about it, okay, because you haven't heard that much about the fact that, yes, you have to ban guns. You have to put more laws in place, and you're there in dealing with your different communities and the different people living in this country.
Right.
Because things are, you know, just like it's deteriorating.
I don't know if I agree with banning all guns. I don't know whether that's just going to be a solution that people will even get on the table to ban all guns, because you have that Second Amendment or whatever a number amendment it is that people have the right to bear arms in terms of when the government becomes too tyrannical. That people have the right to bear arms and rise up. That's kind of the gist of it.
Yeah, but so bear arms means that you can have, you have the right to kill somebody if you're down there.
Well, I mean, the concept is, as I said, it's when the government becomes tyrannical and dictatorial and try to oppress the population, that the population has the right to rise up against a tyrannical government, a government that would be a dictatorship or go crazy. So I don't know if... banning all guns is ever going to be acceptable. I don't think it will in the United States. But also, you know, you have the NRA and some people who want to go to the other end of the extreme,
right. And
let everybody have guns, because their claim is, you know, a lot of these shootings wouldn't happen if you had a good guy with a gun. You know, you got the bad guy with the gun, but if there was a good guy with the gun that came in the room, he probably could have stopped the bad guy with the gun. And, you know, that's just kind of like the Wild West mentality to me, where everybody's just start shooting everywhere. And, you know, some people like that old cowboy myth mentality, that John Wayne myth, but I don't know how conducive it is for a civilized society where people are trying to live in peace and harmony. You have everybody walking around with guns. But maybe, you know, maybe it is a deterrent. If the person sees your gun, you see their gun, all right. And I guess you just move on to the person who doesn't own a gun, huh?
But to go back to this magazine, Eric, and that was, as I said, Mother Jones magazine, and out in June 2015. Here it says right here that Black deaths matter. Now it's Black lives matter. Okay? So it's not going backwards with this whole gun thing and Black deaths. It's going forward. So therefore, that's the reason why these young kids are demonstrating and they're going to be doing it more and more and more and more. And they should. Because these kids are getting to the point where I don't know. People have so many guns. What do you do with a gun? You shoot, right?
Right, yeah. I just don't want us to combine the two issues. Black Lives Matter is a different issue than gun rights. And I don't want to draw the correlation.
Well, I'm not drawing the correlation, but I'm just saying.
Just because guns are in our society, that's what's killing Black people. Black Lives Matter, guns are a part of that, but the Black Lives Matter issue is a separate issue from the gun rights issue. It has an effect, I believe, that, you know, if we had less guns, certainly in our community, that we wouldn't have gangbangers and people like that killing each other and killing innocent people, really.
Mm-hmm.
But the Black Lives Matter issue is a separate issue, I believe, because we're talking about aggressive acts by police officers against people of color, Black people, killing Black people, killing Hispanic people as well. And so, but we're focused on Black Lives Matter in this particular issue. And it is a thing that we want the law enforcement in this country to address. And also, too, from that perspective, you know, they try to have the misnomer that crime has gone up, but crime has not gone up. And I was reading an article that they claim that since this kind of Black Lives Matter issue, or the Ferguson effect is what they call it, that there's been a rise in crime because the police have been... I think the suggestion is they're kind of suggesting that the police's hands are tied because they want to be a little bit more politically correct. I'm paraphrasing here, and this is my own concept of it, my own interpretation of it. But the police are kind of hands are tied because they don't want to, they can't enforce the law as aggressively, so crime has gone up.
Yeah, they can't shoot.
Which is actually not true. Crime hasn't gone up.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to call that the Ferguson effect, which is not true as well. So there's a lot of mistruths and lies out there to try to confuse people about it.
So what's an answer? What's an answer?
I don't know what the answer is, but
you're not going to erase racism. You're not going to be able to negotiate truthfully with these different groups who have different feelings. That yes, kill them all. That's not really. It shouldn't really be an issue. But when you see a lot of the cops, yes, I said a lot of the cops, when they have guns, they don't know what to do with them. Obviously, they should know that they can kill somebody. And lo and behold, it happens. It's been happening and happening and happening. So the point is, when does it stop?
Right.
And how in the world do you think we're supposed to survive in a world that where people who don't like you because of your color, you're just going to shoot them? Well, hell, you know you're going to shoot back at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So it is so confusing that it puts you in a state of anger a lot. Because when you hear about this kid here, that kid there, this is happening, and for instance, it's always, you know, like Black versus white, or Latino versus white, or something like that. A lot of people can't get over the fact that they have different colors in this world.
Right, that's true.
You see?
That's true.
So it's very frustrating that you even have to talk about over and over and over again.
Right.
And see these different things over and over and over again.
Well, you know, people say that the civil rights movement really didn't start in the 60s. It started actually in the 40s,
sure,
and the 50s, and even earlier.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, the passage of time and the attaining of rights might not come in a certain generation. That generation might have to work to push that rock up the hill, and the work has to be taken over by the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really unfortunate that, you know, the people were under the misconception that we were post-racial in America, but ended up being like Reconstruction. Reconstruction happened,
yeah.
The slaves were set free, a lot of Black people got elected to state houses and stuff like that. And then what happened after that? I think the Ku Klux Klan and these organizations rose up to take back and kick out a lot of these people out of the legislatures, not give them their 40 acres and a mule, steal the land. So this is this time doesn't remind me because I wasn't there, but makes me think about it's similar to that time after Reconstruction when people really wanted to take the country back and were willing to overthrow the country because they didn't like the progress that was being made in the country. You have individuals in this country now, this day, that really want to overthrow the government because they don't like the direction the country is going in. You know, more rights for people, lesbian and gay people able to get married, gay folks able to get married, black people get more rights, Hispanic people are coming, you know, so there's people that they want a white society, they want to be treated like first-class citizens, certain segment of that population, and that's what they believe in, unfortunately. But moving on to something else other than that.
What else is there? You come back, you know, been on vacation, and we had a great time. And, you know, I wanted to send a message to some of the people in St. John that we met. The young man, Ely, hello. There's another young man, he and his girlfriend were, or he and his wife-to-be. They were coming in to New York, and it was 7 years. And it was going to be the first time they had been in New York. And I said, wow, okay. Well, how do we get around in New York? So I was telling them about something. But I was also telling them, too, if this is your first time, you have to be very careful and da-da-da-da-da, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I would have liked to have said to him, oh, it's fantastic. Oh, it's wonderful. You know, don't worry about your pocketbook. Don't worry about your clothes and whatnot. But I found myself saying, wow, I'm really afraid for them to come into New York or into the United States, but mainly into New York City by themselves, downtown New York. Come on. You know, they were very naive, but they're sweet and whatnot, and I would hate to see the other thing. I just hope they're okay. Because there's a lot to be very much aware. You've got to be aware in New York City.
Yeah, but I really don't. I think it's a little bit less dangerous nowadays than perhaps it was back then. Or back maybe the time you're thinking of. I don't think it's a place where you really have to, you know, you got to be aware, but it's not like, you know, other urban areas where there really is a high crime statistic where you're
I think
really
people coming from a very calm places where they don't have all this, you know, a confusion and death by gun and so forth and so on, that kind of violence, do have to be very much aware coming into this country. Very much aware. There's no doubt about it. And so, I was reading this book, and I wanted to get into it. Oh, by the way, met a lady and my friend, two ladies who are also teachers, and they were in on vacation, as teachers do. Soon as school was out, everybody wants to go away, and they did that, and we had a fine time, and they were from Connecticut. And lo and behold, this is just for sure, the world is really not such a big place after all. They were from Connecticut, and lo and behold, they were living on the same street as one of my cousins did.
Mm.
Now, you know, to go there and talk about, well, where are you from, that kind of thing, and then to find out that they, one of them at least, lived on the same street as a cousin.
Mm.
So, but it was great, absolutely great. Spent a lot of time in the water and had a good time. And but we did go on to kind of look, you know, sightseeing trips, and we went into this area and we were looking at these old ruins, and I think they were either from the 1700s or the 1800s, and we were taking pictures, and they were really very, very interesting because I wanted to find out a lot more about this kind of forts they were and the battles that they were having in that particular area at that particular time.
And this is St. John Island in Caribbean.
This is St. John, yeah. And this was, you know, way up in the mountains. And I didn't think I could get up so high, but we did. And this was it was wonderful, but at the same time scary, and at the same time very interesting and fascinating. All that into one. And the water was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's been happening politically here? Downtown Newark today, you had Martin Luther King statue that was unveiled. Is that so?
Right. Today was the unveiling of the MLK statue. They had a statue put up in Newark, New Jersey. Martin Luther King statue that probably should have been erected a long time ago. And unfortunately, It wasn't, but it was erected today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was unveiled today.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's ironic to think that in a city like North New Jersey that it took to 2015 to get a statue of Martin Luther King when you had several black mayors that probably were contemporaries of Martin Luther King, at least one or two, that were in the same peer group, age group, and you would assume that at least one of those individuals, at least a second black mayor of Newark, would take the initiative to erect a statue in honor of Martin Luther King, particularly in an African American city and things like that. So it's a little bit ironic to me that it took such a long time, but it was, from what I understand, a very nice ceremony. I've seen some very nice pictures of it. I've seen pictures of the statue, and it looks really nice and very very similar
mm-hmm.
to Dr. King.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one good thing. Also, in the news, what I wanted to talk about was, the recent, the president, like I said, went up to Roseburg to console the people, and had people that were against him doing that. And it's just, it seems like he can go nowhere without catching some kind of flack from somebody. That's a difficult, thankless job. And it's probably even more thankless when you're the first black one doing
right.
it. So that was something that was kind of interesting. And so we have anything else to talk about, Ma? Anything
I was talking about the art of visualization. Somebody had called, I was having a discussion with several people about the art of visualization. And I understand that now you can get the art of visual by Genevieve Bayrat, if you go online and order it. I think that is a book, yeah.
Right.
And this woman had written this book some time ago. And it was, she had information that this philosopher had given her. And it was called The Art of Visualization. In other words, if you wanted something to happen, they were teaching that you have to visualize, see yourself in doing what you want to do, see yourself in anything that you want to happen to you, and visualize, absolutely visualize yourself as doing certain things, and, actually, spending time visualizing it every single day, not only one time a day, but several different days, and keep doing it, and what will happen is that the whole thing will happen for you. And I was trying that, and I'm not going to tell you what, but I know that it does work. And you also have to say a prayer at the end, but you have to actually, use your mind and use the strength of yourself, thought, to visualize what you want to do, how you want to do it, who you want to be, what you want to be, and how you want it to happen to you. So it's a very interesting concept, and I found that it works. And I found that it worked in St. John. It was absolutely wonderful, but there's a lot to it. And one of these days I'm going to be talking more about it and asking people that they should define themselves. In other words, who do you think you are? And how do you define yourself? You really have to ask yourself about defining yourself. And you have to think of yourself as, you ask your question, who are you socially, professionally? What are your qualities that you have, and why do you want to be something else if you don't like what you are? And or who would you like to be? Who would you like to do it? What kind of you are you? And you walk, you talk, you laugh, you think, you sing. So who are you, and what are you? What are you? What do you want to do with yourself? Who do you want to be? So you put the check, envision that, envision your wishes. I think I told you that story about the time I wished for $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going through this whole process that Genevieve Bayrat, the author, of The Art of Visualization, was talking about it. And I think I was wishing for about $1 million, right? So she was saying in this book, you have to see it. You feel it, you taste it, you live it. You are actually, there with this money. So here I was visualizing it. So she said, you have to do this every single night, you know, until it happens. So I think I just must have counted out about almost $1 million every night. First of all, using one, that didn't work. I started using 10. That didn't work. And then I started using $100 bills. So finally, I got up to, almost $1 million. Anyway, one day I woke up the next morning, and this is a true story. I told the story that time before. But it just came to me a little while ago that, it happened again. But anyway, I woke up the next morning because I had been counting this money out the night before for months. And this one day I woke up and, you know how you're checking and counting, you think that you have money that you know you don't have,
right,
but you think it's going to appear magically?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I got so tickled because, I've got there's the stuff with the bank, putting my information, and my balance came to be $999,000. And I looked and I didn't believe it. And then I did it again. There were all the buttons in the bank to find out if the amount I had in the bank account, and it came up to $999,000. And I'm thinking then, okay, did it one more time just to prove that,
true. This is you checking your bank account.
I was checking my bank account. That was in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it couldn't be possible because I didn't have it. I knew I didn't have it, but you know how to think that you're going to have money in your account.
Right.
So anyway, I called the bank, the lady who was the bank manager of the bank I was dealing with at the time. And I said, Dorothy, would you please check my account? She did it. She said, you had $999,000 in the month and, in your bank account. And she said, I'll check it again. She did. Same thing happened. And I said, Dorothy, I don't have that kind of money in my account. She said, that's in your account right now. I also, and I showed you the bank, the information from the bank, right?
You told me about it. I don't know.
I still have it. I'll show you when we get off the air here. Anyway, then she called back, and I was so tickled. But anyway, she called back, and she said, all right, I checked it. And this was after she had checked it about 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
And so she called back. She said, Ken, she said, this is what happened. Somebody, it was a paper company, that there was a publishing, a book business or something, somewhere in Africa, that had made a deposit in a publishing company, in New York. And then one digit off.
So mistakenly it was
it was put into my account.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine said, do you want to go to Europe and we can have a ball or something? But really, that was something that really happened. And that came from this book, The Art of Visualization.
Well, you should have visualized keeping it.
I know. I didn't do that. That's right, I should have.
That's the one part you forgot to visualize.
Put
it
keeping
in your pocket.
But anyway, it was funny, but I did try this when I was in St. Thomas, and so things kept happening the way I wanted them to happen. So it was a good time. But hello to some of the friends that we met there in St. Thomas. And it was just a great, great visit again and again because I had been there several times. So anyway.
Mm-hmm. I was watching the other day. I go on YouTube from time to time, and you can find a lot of people uploading videos, informational things,
yeah,
a number of things. And this was I'm a boxing fan, and I'm a fan of Floyd Mayweather.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but in this particular video, they're showing Floyd spending all his money. He's a very wealthy fighter. He really, whatever he did from a business standpoint, from being able to negotiate his deals, was really, really brilliant because
mm-hmm.
he's one of the highest paid athletes of all time, I think. And I think he at one time topped Forbes list of top paid athletes. But he has, he'll go and spend $50,000, $100,000, things like that. But he's also the type of guy, one of the boxers that fights out of his gym in Vegas. He bought the guy a car. The guy didn't have a car, he bought him a car.
Mm-hmm.
So he's also that type of individual. But so I don't know all the kind of humanitarian things that he does. I'm sure he does look out for his people. But just makes you think that nowadays it's kind of different priorities that some people have. You know, he calls himself the greatest of all time, and everybody refers to Muhammad Ali as the greatest of all time. And now Floyd has said he is the greatest of all time. And boxing-wise or whatever, I don't know whether he's a better boxer than Muhammad Ali. They're two different weight classes. But Muhammad Ali was called the greatest of all time before, not only for his boxing, but for his where he stood as a man of principle, because he sacrificed some of the prime years of his athletic ability, his boxing ability, for his beliefs, because he didn't want to go to Vietnam and fight against and fight for the, in the Vietnam right. War. So they stripped him of his title. And like,
was it recently?
No, I'm talking about when that happened to Muhammad Ali. You remember,
oh,
right?
Yeah, Muhammad Ali.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and they also kind of put him. Was he in jail for? Maybe he was in jail for a little bit, right?
I don't remember him being in jail.
He was never actually locked up.
Yeah.
They stripped him of his title.
Yeah.
And he couldn't fight for 3 years. And but he stuck to his guns.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they relented, and he was able to get his license reinstated to fight. So that's why people refer to Muhammad Ali as the greatest of all time. Like I said, I don't know what kind of community things that Floyd does. I'm sure he does look out for people in the community, and that probably gets a lot less airplay than his spending money and throwing money up in the air, because they always like to present the negative image of our young athletes and our young men who have a certain amount of swagger and carry themselves a certain way, as opposed to presenting a positive image. But I think that Muhammad Ali probably edges you out a little bit, Floyd, in terms of just some of the things and where he was historically at that time in the world. So I just wanted to talk about that. But I look forward to seeing Floyd's next fight. And like I said, whatever kind of business things that he worked out to make sure that he got paid, the type of money that he got paid to fight, was brilliant. And he's someone who's held on to his money, and he seems to know how to budget it, because he still has a lot of it, which is more than a lot of our
fighters,
athletes
yeah.
and fighters. They always seem to get swindled and taken advantage of, unfortunately. So I say more power to Floyd. I just don't agree that you're the greatest of all time, Floyd. You're the second greatest of all time.
You going to say that to his face in case you meet him one day?
Yeah, I'm telling you, because Muhammad Ali, you know, Floyd is a different time. But as I said, I give him his props for, I know that he looks out for people in the community.
Yes,
so,
yes.
It just doesn't get the type of airplay that it should get. But because of where his place in history and the things that Muhammad Ali had to face as opposed to what Floyd had to face, I think that edges it out. Maybe if you're talking about strictly boxing, who knows?
Yeah. There's something else we want to talk about. You know, that is the unveiling of Martin Luther King's statue in New York today. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, we discussed that.
Just now?
We talked about that a little while ago, Martin Luther King's statue. And other stuff in the news today. They found Lamar Odom.
Oh, yeah.
Who was found unconscious and things like that. And
Lamar Odom is one of the husband of one of the coaches.
Lamar Odom is a former basketball player.
Oh, okay.
Who happened to marry one of the Kardashians.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's unfortunate that most people don't know him as having been married to one of them as opposed to his basketball career, but such is life. But, yeah, he was found unconscious in a brothel, of all places. And, people said that he's unresponsive now. He's unconscious. He's in hospital. And apparently, I just saw here on the internet that he was doing cocaine as well. He was having herbal Viagra. So
herbal Viagra.
I guess that's natural Viagra, but both of them probably increased the blood flow and the heartbeat. So we hope that he gets better. And looking forward, hopefully, that it's something that he could recover from. Things like that. You know, the debate, I didn't see the entire debate last night. I know it was more cordial than the Republican debate. Of course, you have Donald Trump coming out and saying certain things that he believes, you know, and commenting on it. And I'm just wondering when the shoe's going to drop on Donald Trump. When are people going to stop being enthralled with the kind of this TV media candidacy.
And that's what some of the people were saying today for the panel today. And,
some of the people on the panel.
On the panel.
Which, elaborate, which
the panel with the presidential panel, the Democrats.
I'm talking about the debate. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so I'm just wondering, but I lost my point because you interrupted me.
Okay. Well. All righty.
Well, so we're coming to the end of the show anyway.
Right.
So, but lots of stuff in the news. I'm dying to see the next panel. I think it's going to be in a couple of days, right?
Yeah.
You know one thing, Eric, I still have a problem with what's his name, Carson, you know?
Ben Carson.
Yeah, Ben Carson, the neurologist, if you're a neurologist. But I don't understand what he's saying half the time. I'm wondering if he understands it. But it looks like it's pathetic, really, some of the stuff that he says.
Ben Carson is his own type of animal. He's just kind of crazy things, and I wouldn't vote for him, and I wouldn't care to hear him speak. It looks like he's going to fall asleep at any minute. I mean, but that's a superficial thing. The more substantial, substantive things about him are his policies that he promotes. For example, what he recently said about after people got killed in Oregon was how he would stand up and tell everybody to attack him and do this and that. And he wouldn't just stand there and let the person shoot him. I'm sure nobody is going to stand there and let somebody shoot him. And you don't know what they did because they're not here anymore. And the guy's not here anymore. So, but just to kind of suggest that they were just went willingly and, you know, it's unbelievable that some of the stuff that some of these people say, but also too, you're lying. You wouldn't say attack. You wouldn't do that. You might do it, but you know, you never know. You haven't been in that situation. People said there's a story floating around that I've seen people making reference to on the news channels, and that one time he was in a place where he was standing in line at some sort of place, and a guy came up and stuck a gun in his back, and he said to the person, I think you want the guy behind the counter.
He did not.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. That's what I heard on the news channel. So that wasn't really kind of standing up and attacking. That's kind of trying to get somebody else shot and saving yourself. So all the brave talk about you're going to stand up and attack and tell everybody to say, I'm not going to let you shoot me when you had the opportunity.
Okay.
You did something a little bit different. And that's kind of part of the problem with a lot of these guys. They say one thing.
Sounds like you have a little bit of a problem.
And then the actions that they have or that come out, the actual facts come out, they never match up with these people. So, you know, it's just a constant, what I find, with them, with that other side, the Republicans, a constant kind of just making believable a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
And coming off like blowhards, big and bad, and we're going to do this. And it really misses the point of sensitivity. That missed the point of sensitivity. He's supposed to be a doctor, bedside manner. That misses the point of sensitivity. I'm sure people who lost their loved ones didn't want to hear you say or insinuate that their loved ones went out in a cowardly way or died, taking part in their own death or whatever. So that was really kind of disrespectful, I thought. But even though, you know, Dr. Carson, he sticks to his guns and does these kind of things, says these things, which is fine and well, but a lot of the things don't really jive with what's reality.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, one thing I like to leave people with the information that downtown New York, there is the Martin Luther King statue. There's also the Althea Gibson statue, which is, I think, is in the North, right?
Right, that's in North North.
Roberto Clemente, no, I don't think there's a statue of that Roberto Clemente. But also, what's the other statue that they just went up?
Rosa Parks.
Rosa Parks statue, of course,
And there's also a statue for Congressman Donald Payne,
the first
African-American congressman from the 10th District from North New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as we mentioned earlier, the King statue was unveiled today, and it's something that they've been working on for quite some time. Something that I know my father, William Payne, was very involved in trying to help make sure that happened, and he received a plaque. Got surprised today from what Lee got a plaque. But time has run out for us, so we're going to jump off. It's run faster than we thought here on the Kate Thompson Live Show. We want to remind you to join us every live, every Wednesday at 8 to 9 p.m. And also, as I said, you can listen to archives of the show. You can listen to old episodes of the show
if
there's one that you like. You know, when you do that, click the like button, any buttons you like. You know, there's some like favorites. We appreciate that. Once again, this has been the Kate Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can find us blogtalkradio.com/Kate Thompson Live. Wayne wasn't able to join us. My name is Eric Payne. Thank you for joining in, and you are the host.
I'm Kate Thompson. So join us again next week on Wednesday from 8 to 9 on blogtalkradio.com, Kate Thompson Live. Thank you.